Hello and welcome to the third edition of the new BRC Trade Policy Podcast. Is autumn the crunch time? I'm William Madison and I'm joined by our EU and international trade policy expert, William Bain. Hi, William.
Hello there.
And the NIRC's director, Aidan Connolly, Master of Protocol on Ireland and Northern Ireland. How are you going, Aidan?
I'm fine. I'm absolutely useless at everything else.
As ever, we've got a lot to discuss, so we'll just crack straight into it. William, starting with the UK-EU negotiations, as we speak, the EU-UK high-level meeting is happening virtually. What actually is the high-level meeting, and what will it mean for negotiations over the summer?
Well, yes, this is the EU-UK high-level meeting, originally billed as a summit. And this is between the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and three of the EU's five presidents. So President of the Commission Ursula von der Leyen, the European Parliament's President David Sassoli, and the President of the European Council Charles Michel. And this is in a sense to provide some impetus into the discussions, to perhaps use a word that the Prime Minister here likes a lot, oomph, shall we say. To take stock of where things have got to, which is not very far in the four negotiating rounds thus far. And I think to try and give some impetus going into the summer. So we know that there are going to be negotiations each week from the end of this month until the end of July. And very interestingly, something the Commission does not normally do, there are going to be also a formal round in mid-August as well. So all of this is really to get things in a position whereby instead of talking past each other on what their positions are, we try and get some common positions and common stances to work through the difficulties by the time we get to September. And then we're in for a really fraught autumn, September through to October, to get an agreement in principle and legal text very much required by the end of October.
So retailers will be looking for a deal without tariffs and also obviously good outcomes on the non-tariff barrier side. How are things looking and what are the major sticking points right now?
Well, the issue of zero tariff, zero quota, which as you say is really critical for retailers and consumers, is tied up really with two things. So firstly, you have the issue of fisheries. The EU has said it will not do a zero tariff, zero quotas deal without an agreement on fisheries. Now that was supposed to have happened by now. I mean, the initial deadline for that was going to be at the end of June. So we're clearly going to go by that deadline. Again, there is a little room for maneuver on fisheries, one can discern in the weeds of reports of these negotiating rounds. So the EU would like to preserve as much of the existing fishing rights, which it says in many cases go back for centuries amongst some of the member states. The UK is saying it is now an independent fishery state. It has an exclusive economic zone of 200 miles outside its territory. And there must only be sort of annual discussions to set a quota year by year. The EU finds that unacceptable. So is it possible there can be some meeting in the middle? Broadly, yes. You know, we can find something which I think would mean that some of the existing EU demands would have to go, but you have more stability than annualized negotiations would allow for. So possible compromise there. The other aspect to a zero tariff, zero quota deal that's got to be satisfied before we get there is in relation to the level playing field. And this is the agenda which the EU has developed into many of its trade agreements in recent years, which sets minimum standards. It doesn't always involve regulatory alignment, but it involves a minimum floor of standards by which both parties shouldn't fall below. And so in relation to what was anticipated in the political declaration, if you remember, that's the non-legally binding, but intended to be politically binding. signpost document for the future relationship, it was said that there would be a level playing field that involved things like state aid, competition policy, environmental, social and labour market standards. And in fact, it's in paragraph 77 of the agreement. I've got it open before me right now. In February, the UK said that having regained all of its sovereignty from the EU, what it is seeking is a deal which has requirements that are more like the Canada-EU trade deal, so more limited requirements on a floor of rights than what had been intended both by the political declaration and the EU's list as well. So that's really, I think, the main issue of problem in the negotiations. Now, again, it's possible to see a landing spot, and if we do, then I think we can get to that zero tariff deal.
So for our listeners, could you go into a bit of detail about the new UK government's announcement on border processes and whether this will make life easier for retailers from January 1st, say, whether or not there's a trade deal in place with the EU?
Well, it's interesting. If you remember in February, Michael Gove announced that there would be full third country border controls to sort of shrieks of dismay from business across the board. And, you know, as the months have gone on and the practical problems with delivering that have become more apparent, so I think the BRC and others have been listened to. And we saw a significant compromise on Friday. I mean, this is meant to apply if there is a deal or if there isn't a deal. But remember, if there isn't a deal, these are a set of unilateral easements which the UK government has made. So, for example, you don't have to do full customs declarations on day one. And this is on the GB border only, not on the Northern Ireland border, of course. So you don't have to do full customs declarations on day one. You don't have to do checks for sanitary and phytosanitary standards until later in the year as well. You don't have to do safety and security declarations until July. So it's phasing in some of the consequences of not having a deal and having to, in a sense, control what's coming into the GB border. So we shall see. If there is a deal, one would hope that these easements could go further and that they could be written into the agreement and perhaps reciprocated on the EU side. Because remember, if it's no deal, there will still be border formalities required on the 1st of January in terms of goods leaving the European Union to come to Great Britain. So there are things called exit summary declarations, which are quite costly and involve a lot of time to complete, which would have to be made before the goods leave the EU. This is just a set of unilateral easements. The EU has been quite tough in its language and its measures about what would happen if there was a no-deal outcome. It said the UK could expect full third country checks and controls from the 1st of January. We'll see. There are some possible facilitations that the EU could bring in, but only if it assesses that it's in its interest to do so. And of course, these would have to be reciprocated too. And of course, the easements the UK government have issued on Friday don't apply to exports. So members who have goods going from GB to the European Union, whether it's food or other products, are going to face third country controls in respect of a no deal scenario on the 1st of January. I think there's a broader point here, which is that on the non-tariff barrier side, checks, controls, product standards, product checks, there's not a huge amount of difference between a no-deal outcome and the deal that could emerge in September and October. And that's as a result of the red lines that both sides adopted. The UK in particular saying no alignment with EU rules, no role for the European Court of Justice. Well, that means you end up with a relationship that looks rather like a third country relationship without the special facilitations that alignment provides in terms of the single market. So there will be small differences really between no deal and a deal in terms of non-tariff barriers. But nevertheless, there are some important facilitations that we hope to build into the agreement, and we'll be speaking with both sides to try and make those happen in the months to come.
So, as you said, September, October really starting to look like the crunch time. What about for other negotiations that the UK is involved in right now? So the United States and Japan, for example, what are the timelines on those?
Well, the UK is aiming to have everything completed by the end of this year. There are around 40 agreements with third country trading partners that it's seeking to roll over, first of all. So these are, for example, with South Korea, with Canada, with Mexico, with Chile. And roughly half of these have been rolled over as we speak. But a very important half have not. Including with Mexico and Canada. So that's got to be completed, or else we're going to face a hole in terms of our arrangements with these countries in terms of tariffs on the 1st of January. The other parts of the ambitious agenda that they've set are to launch new negotiations. These started last week with Japan. Now, this is because Japan refused to roll over the agreement that it has with the EU currently, the EPA, for the UK. It wanted special arrangements, thought it could get a more attractive set of tariff arrangements from basically starting with a fresh piece of paper. And so those discussions really have got to be concluded really by July. Because the Japanese Parliament, the Diet, has got to ratify the agreement at a particular time of the year. So they're going to be on a very, very quick trajectory with those negotiations if they're going to yield something. With the United States, again, what the UK has set the ambition for is to reach an agreement by the time of the elections in America on November the 4th. And that means that there are some really difficult compromises and trade-offs that have to be dealt with by the UK government, resolved within cabinet, and negotiated in a very short time. And that's why many people are still skeptical that there would be a full FTA with the US before the presidential election. It's possible there could be something like a phase one agreement, such as the US signed with China earlier this year. So it may do something on the tariff side, we will see. But it is difficult to see that all of the sectors who are involved in these negotiations will have had all of their issues resolved and fully negotiated by November. So, as I say, the jury's out on whether there will be a limited agreement or whether there will be something more comprehensive by the time of the election. I think it's also fair to say that the Democrats in the United States are not anti a trade agreement as far as we can make out. So even if there were a change of administration in January of next year, it is likely that these negotiations would continue. And the US Trade Representatives Authority, without further congressional input, lasts through until the middle of next year. So we shall see. Maybe something signed by the time of the election, but it might go into next year for there to be anything like a full FTA emerging. It's a very ambitious timetable.
Cool. Thanks, William. So, Aidan, turning to you now, you're involved with the Joint Brexit Business Group in Northern Ireland. You recently published a report which received a lot of coverage. Can you tell us what the main asks from the report were?
I certainly can. Can I firstly say that I can share that William is an absolute hit at the parties, quite simply because I even I was getting a little disheartened there. No, yes, you're absolutely right. We did come up with a paper called Implementing the Protocol in Northern Ireland, What Businesses Need and Why. And that paper has gone far and wide. And what it's actually done as well has been mentioned in dispatches by Michel Barnier. So the paper itself, what is in this paper? Well, the paper was put together by 1314 of the business organisations and trade bodies across Northern Ireland, everything from hospitality to freight, to the CBI, the IOD, farming, dairy. And what we did was really do an approach, a response to the UK's approach to the NI Protocol Command paper. The key points that came out of our paper was that, firstly, we welcome the first steps of progress in grappling some of the core challenges that arise from the protocol commitments. I suppose it's kind of like the Alcoholics Anonymous one. You can't deal with a problem until you admit that you have one. And this was really the first time that the UK government has admitted that it needs to live up to those responsibilities that it has, which stems from the Northern Ireland Protocol as part of the withdrawal agreement. But in the UK government command paper, there's a lot of ambition, but there's very little technical detail. So we need to move from ambition to technical detail very, very, very quickly. As well as that, we're going to need better access for business on this issue. So when this paper came out, we hadn't actually spoken in any sort of detail to Her Majesty's government on the Brexit issues since really last July when this government came in. Whereas before, we had been talking to the Border Delivery Group every couple of weeks. They had actually flown over here to Northern Ireland. We haven't had that level of engagement. We've had some kind words from the Secretary of State from Northern Ireland, but we haven't had that level of technical engagement which we had under Theresa May's government and which we need as trade bodies and as businesses to be able to explain to members and for individual businesses to prepare for the 1st of January. Other points that came from our paper was that the Northern Ireland to Great Britain and Great Britain to Northern Ireland detail is hugely impossible and is needed now. But we can't forget about the integrated nature of the whole island economy. That's particularly important when you come to food processing, dairy processing, even when you come to as far as supply chains. And at the moment, a lot of goods would come across from Holyhead to Dublin, go to distribution centres in Dublin, and then move to Northern Ireland. So there, we need to understand, you know, we need the government to understand that this will be a fundamental change in how we do business, and that our main aims, which are overriding asks, really, as far as the government is concerned, and that's for representation, for mitigations, that needs to be technical solutions that are put forward by the UK government, and then derogations, that needs to be generosity of spirit from the EU to allow those mitigations to take place to remove some of that friction, and finally compensation. Now we're talking about a hand up, not a hand out. There's no use just throwing money our way that runs out in the medium term, or that doesn't have a lasting legacy. We need investment in the infrastructure. We need to be able to invest in computer systems. We need to train people up very quickly. So we're talking about investing, not handout. There also needs to be solutions. Those mitigations we're talking about need to reflect the needs of business, and they need to affect the needs for consumers. So we're talking things like applied trusted trader schemes. So there's trusted trader schemes that are quite complicated, but that can do a lot. They can do more than just customs, but it takes quite a while to get them in place. So, you know, whether or not that can be done by the 1st of January is still something that needs to be proven to us. But as well as that, it can be costly in the fact that, you know, there is an evidentiary burden and it does take some time to do. As well as that, there needs to be an education piece, which is undertaken by the government in Great Britain and the government in Northern Ireland. And that needs to explain what the protocol implementation means in practice. especially for small business. Now, if the largest grocers of whom we represent and some of the largest other retailers, they're finding it hard getting their head around this and how to prepare, what processes, what systems, what man hours they're going to need to deliver these changes, then the SMEs who still form an important part of our supply chain will need the same information, and they'll need it in a way that they can understand and deliver upon. So that's going to need a concerted effort from the Northern Ireland Executive, but mostly from the Westminster Government, to make sure that business is ready for these new changes. Lastly, there's very little bandwidth or financial capacity amongst the Northern Ireland business community to deal with this now due to the fact of COVID-19. And there'll be very little bandwidth in January to deal with these changes either. So, you know, what, for example, COVID has put supply chains under pressure. It's also made us understand a few things. So it's brought into stark contrast the fact that just-in-time supply chains are wonderfully efficient and wonderfully cost-effective. However, they are terribly fragile as well, and that means that some slight delays have a genuine, tangible effect about what is on our shelves, as we have seen over this past couple of months. What the document then goes into is the different areas of what the UK government has promised, and the questions that we need answered as a business community. Now, in each of the nine headings, you know, things like ensuring there's no legal impediments to trade at the end of the transition period, to guarantee and legislate for unfettered access to GB for NI goods, to minimise impact of exit checks, declarations or processes for goods leaving GB for NI. For all of these things that the UK government has promised, what we have done is to set out what remains unanswered. And without going into huge amounts of detail, there's 67 questions which are at the heart of the matter. Once we get those 67 questions, I'm sure there might be double or treble that when it comes down to the experts and the technical experts having their particular type of in-depth minutiae questions. But there are 67 fundamental questions that need to be answered in that paper, and to be honest, we are no further along. We had the first meeting last week of the lauded and feted Northern Ireland Business Engagement Forum, which two sessions. One was hosted by Robin Walker, and the other was hosted by the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Brandon Lewis, and you know, it not a lot was achieved in the first day. So, you know, we have sort of pushed back and made it clear what we need as a business organisation to feed into our members and what they're crying out for. Even those solutions which are contained within the UK government command paper still need that derogation from the union's customs code and from the single market rules to allow them to be put in the place. I think it all boils down to the fact that in January we said that it was a Herculean task to get all of this in place by the 1st of January 2021. It's only got harder since then.
So speaking of getting into the weeds, so how will we resolve the issues around new VAT, SPS and custom systems for GBNI goods movement to be in place by the 1st of January?
Well, we're going to have to need a lot of detail very, very quickly. There are things that can be done, but you know, this cannot be done on a unilateral basis by the UK government. There needs to be agreement. I think one of the problems is that there is a lack of trust on both sides. I think, you know, what William was saying earlier on, that's directly a reflective. And what we have here is two separate strands, and the implementation of the Northern Ireland Protocol and the work towards a free trade agreement with the EU, that while separate, are having an effect on each other. And I think, you know, there is still gamesmanship at play here. when what we need and what our members need as businesses is clarity and an ability to put things into practice very, very quickly. We're not there yet.
So do we think that there's going to be any problems with different phase and deadlines for different aspects? So the protocol, EU-GB customs checks, and EU-GB checks on animal food products?
Yes. Quite simply, yes. There are going to be lots of problems. If we're talking about the different phasing, then yeah, that is going to be problematic. Even though, some of the phrasing, the phasing, that has been talked about as far as Calais to Dover and EU going to GB that way, there has been talk that could be possible in Northern Ireland. But the thing is, it doesn't get away from the fact that that would still have to be agreed by the EU under the Northern Ireland Protocol and through that joint committee. And that, again, relies on the goodwill of the EU. It also relies on the UK government actually showing that they are living up to their responsibilities and they are trying to implement what is in the protocol. Now, not just the spirit of the protocol, but the letter of the protocol. And you know, this is not, William once said to me, this is not a Hail Mary pass or this is not a gentleman's agreement. This needs to be based in fact, be based in legislation and within a legal framework. And it also needs to be seen to be happening. It's not enough. You know, one of the things that has happened over the past 8 months is that it's not enough for the UK government to sign up to something. The UK government has to be seen to be making progress on something before the EU will trust that it's happening. And unfortunately, this is a terrible position for Northern Ireland to be in. There is a game of political football going on between the EU and the UK government. Unfortunately, Northern Ireland and Northern Ireland businesses and those businesses who supply to the Northern Ireland market are quite simply the football.
So what are the next steps then in terms of engaging with the UK government, the UK task force at the European Commission and the various other committees under the withdrawal agreement?
So it has already been quite a busy time. Last week we had meetings with Task Force UK and we had our first meeting with the border, Business Engagement Forum. There'll be another round of meetings this week with the Business Engagement Forum. We will also be meeting with HMRC, and we're looking forward to getting some more detail about the practicalities of customs and moving goods and see how that works. We will also this week be in front of the House of Lords EU Select Committee, and we will be talking to them about what we need based on the paper that we put together. We also have some meetings lined up with the Specialised Committee, and that's the committee that sits under the Joint Committee and which informs the Joint Committee, and we'll be feeding in the different members of that committee. Some of our concerns, our members' concerns, and also some of the facts and figures that make up the reason why we're doing this. You know, if you look at the Northern Ireland consumer, we have half the discretionary income of Great British households. That means that the NI consumer can't afford the cost rises that come with friction. And the way we are at the minute, without agreement, without a free trade agreement, without mitigations onto the Northern Ireland Protocol, without a safety and security agreement, without an agreement on SBS, a veterinary agreement on checks, then there will be frictions. And those frictions, unfortunately, neither the retail industry with our high volume but low profit margin, nor the Northern Ireland consumer can afford to absorb.
So finally, William, back to you. We hear the EU is launching a review of its trade policy this week. Can you go into what the impact this will have on us and whether the UK is planning anything similar?
So Commissioner Phil Hogan will launch this on Tuesday via a webinar at 1200 CET. And this is really very important because it reflects on the experiences that we've all undergone during the COVID-19 outbreak. And really there is this choice that trading nations have between more protectionism, which is either to reshore or even onshore or near shore many of the supply chains for different goods, or whether you continue with the kind of open policies that have really sort of characterized EU trade policy, and we understand is going to be the basis of the UK's trade policy going forward. So to try and make trade deals, to try and reduce tariffs, cut the costs for consumers. And so we're going to get this week the sense about where the EU wants to take things. And certainly Commissioner Hogan is very much on the side of those who wants to have diversified supply chains. He is not a protectionist. So we've seen some recent statements from Emmanuel Macron in France that indicated he did want to see certain things reshored. But it's likely that tomorrow's paper will very much go against that. But it will also reflect on the fact that sustainability, climate change have got to be part of a sort of modern trade policy going forward. Now, the BRC has called for a similar such exercise to be conducted by the UK government. And we hope the UK government will do this as soon as possible, because we need to explore exactly these same precise questions. You know, ultimately, who is trade policy going to benefit? Is it going to be manufacturers, or is it going to be the more general consumer interest? So these are big, big questions. It's noticeable that the debate will kick off in Brussels this week, but it's a debate that needs to happen in London, Cardiff, Edinburgh and Belfast before too much longer as well.
Right, and that's where we're going to leave the discussion for today. A lot going on, obviously, and a lot of ways that the BRC is engaging, which is great to hear. So thanks, William, for joining us.
Thank you.
And also a big thank to you, Aidan, and good luck with what sounds like a busy week ahead.
Thank you very much.
And until next time, it's goodbye from us.